We are about to chat with a mom who has experienced egregious abuse of power in child welfare. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. This is Jack, and I am here with Christy, and today we are chatting with Tasha, a mom of three boys in Florida, who is going to share her story with us. Thank you for joining us, Tasha.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, Tasha, we do have to initiate you by asking you a very important question. What is your favorite beverage at Starbucks?
The venti, the biggest one you can order, caramel frappuccino, extra whipped cream, add the caramel to the top. That's my go-to all the time.
You are like the third person in the past week who has had a caramel drink. Is it caramel or caramel? I say caramel.
I don't, as long as we all know what we're talking about, that's all that matters.
I've always called it caramel, but then people call it caramel sometimes. And then I feel like I'm wrong or like I'm not fancy enough. I don't know. We also have Valentina Villalobos with us today, who is the counsel for Tasha. Thank you, Valentina, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Can you also inform us of your favorite beverage at Starbucks?
So I definitely like to try whatever's like seasonal and new, but I would say my consistent go-to would probably be the cinnamon dolce latte.
I am a big fan of cinnamon. So I think actually someone else said the cinnamon dolce latte recently, and I was like, I have to try that, and I haven't yet. So I'm going to have to go for that.
Sounds fancy.
Tasha, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So I am in South Florida. I have been in nursing. I was in nursing for 11 years before this situation took place. My parents are from Trinidad and Tobago. I am biracial, a half Indian, half Black. First in my family, immediate family, I guess you could say, to get a college degree. Born and raised in South Florida, graduated, went to college, got a scholarship, got my master's degree, became a nurse practitioner. And then I've been working in nursing from 2012 to 2023. As far as my little family, well, between my husband and I, we have our oldest, which is his biological son, my stepson, but I still call him my own as well. So at the time of everything taking place, he was 8, but right now he is 10 years old. And then I had my two twin boys in 2022, who will be turning 2 in July.
Something pretty horrendous has happened to you. We have been talking with other families who've gone through very similar things. We're seeing this pop up more and more often. Can you kind of walk us through your story, starting with your pregnancy with your twin boys?
My pregnancy was, I call it a miracle pregnancy, right? I didn't think that I can get pregnant. And forgive me if I get emotional, if I come off as nervous. I'm just a little nervous. That's all. Didn't think I could get pregnant. I was supposed to have surgery because it was believed that I could not get pregnant due to my women issues. We were trying. My last shot was getting a positive pregnancy test in December. And it was crazy because initially they did a pre-op blood test on me and it was negative. So I was sad. I didn't know what to think. I felt defeated at that moment because I didn't want to go through the surgery, but I was going to go through it if it meant me being able to have a baby. Next thing you know, a week later, I start telling my husband, I feel weird. Maybe it's, you know, bad PMS. I don't know. And he's like, Tasha, you're pregnant. And I'm like, no, they just did Black Brick last week. No. He's like, yes, you are. And I kept craving Olive Garden. I was like, okay, maybe something is wrong with me. Next morning, I take a pregnancy test, the home pregnancy test before going to work. Lo and behold, two lines came up. I took about 10 pregnancy tests, roughly, because I was like, there's no way. Got the blood test done. Boom, I was pregnant. In the beginning, you know, the excitement was there. I couldn't believe I was about to be a mom because it was a miracle. I mean, I was about to have surgery and boom, I just find out I'm pregnant. Roughly 7 weeks, I go for my ultrasound and I'm nervous. It was constantly in the back of my mind. Is this a baby that I can carry? Now the question is, can I carry this child because I conceived, but will I be able to carry? So that fear was hitting me at the time. I go in, they do the ultrasound. And the ultrasound tech said, oh my gosh. So I thought, oh my gosh, the worst has happened. I said, what happened? She said, there's two in there. I said, Jesus, have mercy. I started screaming Jesus' name. People were coming into the room. They said, what happened? I said, there's two in there. I told my husband, I told my family, I was taking pictures of the ultrasound machine with the pictures because no one believed me. My kid's godmom told me I almost made her crash the car because she was driving. So no one could believe it. So as the pregnancy progressed, I started growing quickly. But as I started growing quickly because of I had my two little munchkins in there, I was also getting sick very quickly. So by 5 weeks, I started feeling like I was having some morning sickness issues. They started prescribing medications for me very, very early on. Before I even knew there were two in there, I had to get on medication very early on. As time progressed, it started getting worse. I was in and out of the ER, vomiting. I can't eat, constantly having to go to the ER, just mainly for hydration and to control the nausea. Eventually, then my doctor put me on a home pump. It's one of those things you inject yourself in the stomach. So it's a continuous pump, a Reglan pump. It's connected to the machine and it's giving you a continuous infusion of the medication. And then the home health nurses would check on me, give me IV hydration or IV fluids at home. So they put a separate IV in me in the house. And I had to walk around with my little IV pole with my hydration so I don't get dehydrated to the point where I'm in and out of the ER. That went on maybe for like a few weeks to a month. I don't remember the exact duration off the top of my head. Eventually, I was able to be weaned off the medication, but then I started having other issues, developed preeclampsia. Still had the nausea. I was on medications, but it was just better. It was better managed, and I was able to come off the meds. I have a heart condition that I had prior to the pregnancy. So I was on medications for that too, but I was getting a lot of palpitations. It was hard for me to move around without getting like chest discomfort or palpitations. It was too much for me at the time. I was swelling up. Everything you can think of is what was kind of happening to me. Been in and out due to contractions. I start contracting early. They had to check me multiple times because I started contracting too early. Then I fell. I fell in the bathroom because I dislocated my knee and I stood up. I was just standing up and my knee literally just popped out and I fell. I had to go to the hospital for that. I was in a knee brace. I was in a walker. I was in a cane. I actually didn't really start walking without the cane until maybe 2 to 3 months after I gave birth. So I used to use the cane intermittently. Then I went into preterm labor. They were able to stop the preterm labor. I was on a bunch of different meds for that, magnesium, different doses of steroids, because I didn't know if I was going to have to deliver at that moment or not. It delayed the preterm labor only for like a few weeks or so. Because I had preeclampsia, they used to have to check me weekly. They realized that my fluid was dropping. And it was crazy because just a few days prior, I had even asked the question to one of the ultrasound techs who did the ultrasound. And I'm like, you sure that pocket is deep enough? And they were like, oh, yeah, we are only worried when it gets to this point. Just for me to go to the hospital 2 days later for the hospital checkup. Oh, mom, you got to be admitted. We got to give you all of these fluids. We don't know why your fluid is dropping. One of the doctors, the doctor that actually ended up admitting me, she even explained, it's like she wrote it somewhere in my notes. It's not like that was my deepest pocket of fluid. That was my only pocket of fluid. And so my babies were running out of fluid. And so they admitted me. They were giving me a bunch of IV fluids. From that night to the following morning, the pocket started getting less and less. They ended up telling me you're going to have a C-section. You're delivering this admission. You're not going home pregnant this time around. They kept me. They were going to have me delivered the next morning, gave me additional steroids the night before the C-section. I started having really, really bad contractions. Nothing is stopping the contractions. I don't know what labor feels like. I'm a new mom. This is new to me. I don't know what's going on, but this is different. Like, it's just much more painful. They didn't even allow my husband to stay with me. They said it was COVID time, so I was by myself in the hospital. So then I'm crying to him on the phone, calling my mom. Next thing you know, then they tell me, yes, mom, we see the contractions on the monitor. We're going to have to transfer you to labor and delivery. I let my husband know, it's 2 a.m., babies are coming. Next thing you know, water was just all over the bed. They came in, they trusted me. They said, mom, your water broke. So then they pushed me to labor and delivery. They weren't really that concerned because my water broke maybe like 2-3 in the morning, but they didn't take the babies out until after 8 a.m. It was just a very scary situation to be in. Delivered, twin A came out first. He was the one whose water broke. And then twin B then came out after. They were then taken to the ICU and then I was taken to, I guess, recovery. So that's kind of the pregnancy in a nutshell.
You mentioned that you had hurt your knee. Is that possibly related in any way to, because you, I guess we'll talk about this later, but you were diagnosed with EDS.
Yes.
Could that have been related to the knee thing?
They believe it's related to the knee thing because I've had dislocations, multiple dislocations, injuries, issues throughout my childhood. Always had injuries. Yes, I am hypermobile. I can do those weird tricks. Those weird tricks. I can do all of them. I do have the full-blown criteria. I didn't know that the dislocation and all of those things were contributed to this condition until after the fact. I had went many years, my entire childhood, undiagnosed, even though I had all of the signs, symptoms, everything you can think of.
So how long did the baby stay in the NICU? What were their diagnoses when they were there?
The NICU stay, this is why it was odd to me. I never worked in pediatrics, but my background is critical care nursing. My background as a nurse practitioner was acute care also. They have their own protocols for pediatrics, and I respected that. So my twin A was only in the NICU for 24 hours. They sent him out. They never did any radiological exams on him. They didn't really do anything, to my knowledge, maybe basic labs, very basic labs, but not much was really done on him. And then they sent him to the nursery. My twin B, he stayed for 2 weeks. And the reason he was there for 2 weeks is because at 2 days old, he had issues with breathing. I was still in the mother baby floor and they called me and they said, your twin that's down here in the NICU has had breathing issues. They were feeding him. He stopped breathing. He turned blue. We don't know what's wrong with him. All of these things they were telling me. And I was, of course, freaking out. What happened to my baby? They ended up finding that he had an open PFO. He had a hole in his heart. He kept having these random breathing issues where his oxygen levels would drop. He was there for 2 weeks because they have to do this car seat test before they get discharged. And he kept failing it. And I remember one time they called me and they told me, okay, mom, we're trying him the car seat test again. And I said, but for what? He's failing it. His oxygen levels are desaturating. You keep taking him up, putting him in the car seat, and then he's failing. Give him some time. It made me feel like my babies were being rushed out. And the reason why I say that is because twin A, who was pushed out months later, decided to take him to a cardiologist and found out they missed it. He also had a hole in his heart. Nobody paid attention, noticed nothing. It was a finding because our family was making sure that they were being paid attention to and just not being pushed to the side. He's fine, thankfully. And at that time, it was still closing. So it was small. It was small at that time. But the point of the matter is you pushed out my baby to the nursery, pushed him home with me, left the other baby in the ICU because that incident happened in the ICU, but you didn't even know my other baby had the same problem. God forbid that happened while he was at home with me and just stopped breathing. I don't have the medical equipment for him.
I have a kiddo with a PDA and a PFO, and every single doctor that we go to, whether they have anything to do with the heart or whatever, they all listen to his heartbeat and they're always like, oh, he's got a murmur there. Clearly, it must be fairly easy to identify when you just listen over a stethoscope, right?
Believe it or not, twin B, who had the issue, had already closed. The concern that, like, thank God it didn't happen, but if twin B closed and he's the one who had the issues while he was in the ICU, was twin A's hole bigger? God forbid something happened to him, because his own didn't close at the same time. His was still partially open. So now the story continues. So twin A had been home with us. Twin B was still in the ICU. Eventually, twin B did get discharged. They had frequent visits early on, especially twin A. Twin A was losing weight. They kept telling me that, well, it's normal for them to lose 10% of their body weight. But my twin A was this close to going into the 4 pound range. If I remember correctly, he ended up dropping to like 5 pounds on the dot. They even had us bring him like the following week, because if he wasn't gaining weight, then there would have been an issue. He would have been, you know, going down into that, I guess, delicate range, you can call it. After they come out of the ICU, they're supposed to be seen within, I think, 24 to 48 hours by the pediatrician. So both of them, we had them established with the pediatrician office. They were seen frequently. Twin B was always a fussy baby. You walk into the hospital, you walk into the NICU, I hear my baby screaming. Initially, it used to be like, he's a loud one. My twin A is the quiet one. Well, twin B, when he was discharged, that fussiness continued. There was no consoling him. There was no nothing. Twin A, he had fussiness, but it wasn't to the extent of my twin B, who was in the NICU. I'm still considered a new mom because this was my first babies, even though it was a 2-for-1 going on there. I was like, this can't be normal, the way they're crying, the way they're screaming. So then we go to the pediatrician visit. Maybe they were roughly about a month old. And I tell them, they're fussy. I know, yeah, babies are going to cry. They're more fussy than I think is the average. Something's not right. Okay, well, how are you like feeding them? How are they with the formula? Well, they're having a hard time with the formula. They throw up. They spit up a lot. There are times where they used to choke on the formula. I'm explaining this. And I'm like, is it possible that maybe this formula is not good for them? Oh, well, you know, formula doesn't have in it like breast milk. So put probiotics in the formula. She told me to get the Gerber Good Start probiotics. That's what I did. So I got it, started putting it in the formula. Not really making a difference. I come from a family of healthcare providers. I'm not the only one in my family. So I'm asking family members, what's going on? I don't understand. They're like, you got to take them back. Take the babies back to their next appointment. They tell me, well, you know what? They are putting on some weight. They're still feeding. So the fact that they are gaining a little bit, that means they're doing okay.
Even they never suggested a different formula, like, hey, maybe there's some allergies or...
Not until the nightmare started.
Oh my gosh.
Not until the nightmare started. I have EDS and then I fell. So I was in a walker and a cane. I had like braces on my hands where my wrists were immobilized. Family, friends would come over there and say, you know, the babies are kind of small. They're so tiny. And I'm like, I know, but they're not concerned. I don't know why they're not concerned. They're not concerned. I don't understand. But they looked tiny, like, okay, maybe a month has passed. They're a month old and just now hitting 7 pounds type of thing. You know, like time has gone by and they're just now weighing the normal weight of a newborn baby. Family was telling me they don't look like they're gaining weight. Something's not right. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. The pediatrician is telling me this. Maybe beginning September 22, the whole fussy thing continued, even though I had just taken them to the pediatrician end of August of 22 and where they told me put the probiotics in there. September 22, twin B, it's just nonstop. He's still fussy. I'm doing everything these people are telling me to do. It's not working. I get a telemedicine appointment with the provider. They were like, just bring him in. But the first thing she told me, you know, mom, he probably just has colic. I'm sorry. All right. And that's what she wrote in the papers, that it was probably colic. Next day, my husband and I, after taking the older one to school, went to the doctor's appointment. On the way to the doctor's appointment, we had to go to another county because that's where the opening was. The opening wasn't in the county that we were in or the office near to us. So we drove out of county to take him. Around that time, we were going on the highway, got cut off, slammed the brakes. We almost got into a car accident. It was a little bit scary. The babies were a little bit frazzled, I guess, like how you get frazzled, like, oh my gosh, like that type of thing. Like, get to the appointment. I tell the pediatrician what happened. Brush it off. She was only focused on my twin B, who was screaming down the entire office. Probably has reflux. What about twin A? I know this appointment was for twin B, but twin A is here. She's like, well, he doesn't seem that bad. put rice cereal in his milk, put rice cereal in both of their milks. One gets medication, the other one doesn't. If the other one gets fussy, then have the other one brought in and then they'll prescribe the medication. Okay, fine. Twin B continues nonstop. Tell my husband, taking him to the ER. ER doctor, oh, mom, it's just reflux. It'll take a couple of days. Give it like 3 days for the medicine to work. Yeah, do the rice cereal and go from there.
We've definitely seen a theme with families who've gone through this, that they have been brushed off by a lot of doctors and their concerns have been dismissed up until the point where it's all pointed at them. So definitely right in line with what seems to happen to a lot of people.
A week and a half later, twin A is following the same pattern now of my twin B. I'm going to take this twin to the hospital. And then that's when the nightmare started. I took that twin to the hospital. As we're getting ready to take him, I'm changing his clothes. I found like a bruise on his left lower side area. I was like, what the heck? Where did this come from? Right? Asked my husband. He was like, I don't know. It was never there. We had him in Velcro swaddles because we were told by the pediatrician that they needed to be swaddled more because they just have a strong startle reflex. It's a strong motor reflex. When they have the motor reflex, you swaddle. Because they used to break out of the traditional swaddle, they were in the Velcro swaddles. The Velcro part, that same side that it goes over, that left side, that's where I had found that bruise. So I said, oh, maybe it came from the Velcro. Still took him to the ER though. I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was just reflux and he needed Pepcid, like my twin B. Took him to the ER. I told this same ER doctor who saw my twin B a week and a half before was working that night. And I told her what happened. And so then she was listening. I even told her he has like a little bruise there. I'm not exactly sure where it came from. He was in a swing. We use these things at home, like a carrier, the Velcro thing, but he has something there too. So I'm just letting you know. She didn't even see it. I told her. She said, well, mom, we have to do an abuse workup.
You told her, look, here's a bruise and this is how it happened. She immediately decided that an abuse report needed to be made.
Correct. And so she said we needed to do an abuse workup. They took pictures of the bruise there. And then he had a bruise on his arm as well. When you would wrap it around, like those kind of pressure points, what would press against the hand or press against the arm? In my opinion, that's where it kind of lined up with it. And so they took those pictures. They sent him for x-rays. They did blood work. They did a complete trauma evaluation. And I'm like, I kept asking them questions, but they weren't answering my questions. I'm like, there was no trauma. Like, nothing happened to my baby, but they just continued the trauma workup. They did a CT scan. It showed that he had a bleed. And I said, he has a bleed. They were like, yes, it looks like it's probably old, though we don't really know. But the first assumption that I was told was it looked like it was an old bleed. And I'm like, from what? No answer. They did x-rays on him. I didn't know the results of the x-rays right away. They didn't tell me. They told me after the fact, after they called the police on me. Where I used to work, we saw a lot of liver disease, a lot of liver issues. And things involving liver disease, liver issues causes easy bruising, easy bleeding, because it messes with your coagulation. So the first thing I thought was, is there something wrong with my baby's liver? They did a metabolic panel and then they did, which is just basic metabolic labs, potassium, those things. But then they did a liver panel on him, which he never had done before. And then the liver enzymes in the liver panel was elevated. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, does my baby have some sort of liver issue or biliary issue because he's premature? I'm thinking I need to get him to like a hospital that can do like those type of services. This is where my mind is. Not really a lick of a clue. They're behind the doors calling the child abuse hotline on me. So then I'm en route to the main hospital. I get to the main hospital and I find out they called the cops. There were officers that showed up to the hospital when I was there with my twin A. They wanted my twin B and my oldest to be evaluated at the hospital. Husband said, okay, brought twin B in, brought my oldest in. The oldest didn't have any issues. And they sent him with his uncle, my brother-in-law. But then twin B had fractures everywhere. Not a lick of a clue where it came from. To backtrack, while my husband was at the home with the police officers and everything, I was still in the hospital with twin A in the ER at the main children's hospital. And that's when they called a trauma alert on him. And I kept asking, why are you calling a trauma alert? Like, I'm asking questions, but they're not telling me what's going on. They called the trauma alert because they found rib fractures and they never told me. After the cops showed up to the hospital is when they told me that my twin A had a small small liver laceration and multiple rib fractures that appeared to be already healing. And I said, from what? And they were like, you tell me. And I'm like, what? I don't know where that came from. Keep in mind, my baby didn't have bruising to his abdomen. So how in the world am I supposed to know there was something wrong with the liver? The bruising wasn't on his abdomen. It was where the Velcro was. When I kept explaining that, it was like going over their head. I said, he didn't have bruising. I don't know anything about abdominal trauma. I don't know. How would it happen? I don't, like, I keep asking them, is it related to the prematurity? Could have been related to the birth? Could have been related to the pregnancy? Could have been related to so many different things? They didn't want to hear it. And meanwhile, my husband, I guess that's when he was bringing my, our oldest, and then my twin B. So all of this is happening at the same time. They moved myself with twin A to a regular hospital room while my husband, my twin B, and our oldest is in the ER. Then they were like, well, twin B has all these fractures. Where did it come from? I don't know. What do you know? I don't know. The only thing I can tell you, they were more fussier than normal. I took them to the hospital. I mean, doctor's appointments. I took my twin B to an ER visit a week and a half before. This is what they told me. I thought it was the same with twin A. And now here we are. I don't know. They questioned also about twin B because he had a mark on his face, like a bruise to his face. And that was the only thing that we were able to explain because I used to wear the braces on my wrists. My ortho told me that he was not comfortable giving me other steroid injections because I was still breastfeeding. So he told me ice and wear the brace. And so I was trying to pick him up with the brace and his head went forward. He hit the side of my glasses. My stepson was there when it happened. He told them. He said, no, he hit his face on Tasha. Didn't matter. My husband and I leave the hospital completely confused. When we told family what happened, they suggested that we get an attorney involved. So we did immediately. The twins remained in the hospital. Then I go to visit the twins one night and one of the providers pulled me aside and says, so are you safe at home? I said, what? I had my wrist braces on, the immobilizers, and I had a knee brace and they had to wheel me, put me in a wheelchair because I couldn't walk that far to where they were. So they had to call someone to push me in the wheelchair to the floor. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she goes, I just want to make sure you're safe at home. They're scheduling a shelter hearing. And I'm like, a shelter hearing? What is that? And she's like, well, because once they're discharged, they have to determine where they're going to go. So I need to know if you're safe. And I'm like, there's no violence in my home. And she goes, I'm just making sure. And I'm like, no, I have injuries. Yes, but that's not due to violence. That's not violent related. And then she's like, oh, okay. So right automatically, they were assuming it was maybe a domestic violence situation. And it wasn't. The shelter hearing happens and they took the kids. Family members stepped in, said they will take the kids. That's who the kids have been with. Thankful for that. They're with family, not with strangers. That's always a blessing.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.